Why do running shoes have to be so damn ugly all the time?
You know what? That's a really good question, but they are.
Oh. It's cold outside.
Right, right. And it's got like Sonny and Cher singing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is cold outside.
Very.
It was in the teens this morning.
It's not anymore?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm sequestered away in the basement now.
You're cozed up.
That's right. I'm down in the audio cave.
You're the opposite of Quasimodo.
Right. Right. Yeah. No bell tower for me. it is Tuesday, January the 5th, 2016. New Year, episode 193 of On Taking Pictures. Jeffrey Sidoris in a chilly D.C. Bill Wadman in a chilly Brooklyn.
An even chillier Brooklyn, yeah.
Yeah. How was your New Year? What'd you do? Anything fun?
We went over to the Brits' house and Craig made a very nice roast of chicken and potatoes and vegetables. It was delicious.
Nice.
And then we hung out there. You ever play any of these games? What's the game where you like lick the card and stick it on your head? You know, the thing where like you can't see what you are and everyone else has to guess. And you know what I'm talking about?
Drunk.
Is that, yeah. Well, so there's some game that Lisa got where you hang this like tag on your nose that makes you look like your mouth is something else. So your mouth is like an ape mouth or eating spaghetti or whatever it is, like, or a clown, and then you have to ask questions. It's like one of these games.
You have to try and guess what your mouth is.
Yeah, you get like two questions per round going around, and then you can sort of guess what you are. And then I finally figured out that I actually had sort of a monkey face, and I was just like, are there movies
wait, you're just now figuring that out?
I said, you know, are there movies with people with this face? And they were like, yes. And I was like, all right, well then, you know, it's Planet of the Apes. I'm an ape. And I got it. But I did not do well. I'm not good at those games. Anyway, so it was good. Yeah. And then yesterday was my birthday, so it was good. Good week.
Nice.
Yeah, now I'm almost as old as you. I'm catching up. I'm catching up until you leap ahead of me.
Right. We went over to Michelle, the paper conservator from the National Gallery. It was great. She's got fantastic friends, met a lot of really interesting people, met two other paper conservators, one from the Hirshhorn, and her husband is a paper conservator at the Philly Museum of Art.
I've always said that those paper conservatives stick together.
They're very interesting folks to talk to.
Yeah.
Had a terrific conversation and a lot of good people, a lot of new friends. So it's good. The circle is getting a little wider.
Good. Excellent.
Nice. First time I'd actually been awake at midnight in a long time.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a big New Year's fan.
I'm not a big New Year's fan either, and I'm not a big birthday fan. So it's like a weird, this time of year always like it's just like ugh for me. But and so did you watch Ryan Seacrest or anything like that?
No, is that still a thing? Is he still on?
Oh, yeah, no, he's still on. He's still like...
Is it still called Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve, or is it now Ryan Seacrest's New Year's Rockin' Eve?
I think it's New Year's Rockin' Eve with Ryan Seacrest.
Ah.
So, you know, he's not worthy of the upfront name, you know?
Yeah. I don't think I've watched that since Barry Manilow used to sing It's Just Another New Year's Eve.
Barry Manilow.
Yeah.
I love Barry Manilow.
I do too, but I think we've seen probably the last really good eras of Barry.
Yeah, of a lot of these people.
Yeah.
You know, they're all getting old.
Even Motley Crue called it quits.
Did they really? Did they quit finally?
Yeah, New Year's Eve was the last show.
Oh, man. What's Neil going to do now for money? Wasn't he like in dire straits, that guy? I mean, not in the band, but was it?
Oh, I was going to say, no, he was never in Dire Straits.
Hadn't he spent all his money or something like that? Or no, there was something with his kid. Remember, he was on one of those TV shows to raise money.
Didn't he do a reality show?
Yeah, and I think he was raising money because like one of his kids is sick or something. We'll have
to
look up. Yeah, there was something. But, you know.
Oh, well, but I'm not going to make fun of him.
No. He was actually very, it was very nice how we went about it. What's that guy's name? Vince Neil.
Vince Neil.
Right.
And then Tommy Lee got stuck in his drum set.
Wait, the other night?
Yeah, yeah. The New Year's show. Because they built this like roller coaster thing that like this, you know.
Of course they did.
Roller coaster thing of truss work. And then the drum set like would ride along. It was supposed to ride along the truss work. And it got stuck. And they had to have like roadies come.
Did he just keep playing though?
He kept playing for a little while. But then, you know, he's upside down.
Oh, that's just awkward.
So
he's strapped in, right? Because he does that thing where he goes turning over upside down and stuff.
Yeah. So they had the roadies had to climb up the truss work and get him out.
Yeah. In answer, just a real time update here. Apparently, Neil and his wife's daughter died at age 4 of cancer.
Oh my God!
Back in 95. So there is the Skylar Neil Memorial Foundation that donates millions of dollars to all this kind of stuff. They do an annual golf tournament to raise money for kids with cancer. So good for him.
Yeah.
But anyway, but they called it quits. That's sad. The last time. Well,
that's it.
Everyone's got their day.
And sure.
Then they go play golf.
And then they go. That's right. It's weird to think of Alice Cooper out there playing golf.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Alice Cooper's all over
like
the
with
place.
The guys from Hootie and the Blowfish or something.
Yeah, just Hootie, not the rest of the Blowfish.
Oh, the rest of the Blowfish don't play golf?
No, I don't think so.
Just Hootie.
You know, I will say something about Hootie and the Blowfish is a little thing. Somebody once told me
that Darius Rucker has an awesome voice.
Well, yes, and that he came in and did the vocals to like the second album essentially all in one take. Like he came in, sang, and they were like, yep, that's it.
Thanks, Darius.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Which, you know what? It's just like, that's skill, you know?
Yeah. I love his voice. I think he's got a terrific voice. You know, and the fact that he crossed over and became, I mean, they were always sort of country anyway. I mean, you could make that case.
Yeah.
But for him to really cross over and do so well on the country charts, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Just doing what he loves.
You know, we're 7 minutes into the show. We haven't said a thing about photography. Shows you how much good news there is.
Yeah. Let's go for a new record. Okay, so it is a show about photography.
Ostensibly, yes.
Ostensibly. Hey, speaking of shows about photography.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a shameless plug here real quick.
Okay, what do you got?
New episode of PD.
Okay.
New episodes are in the work. The new episode for this year, the first episode of the year, should be this week.
Okay. What's holding you up?
Might be next week. I'm waiting on clearance from Images.
Oh, okay.
Because I can't show some of the images just yet. They haven't been released yet. So I'm waiting to see what I can and can't show.
Okay.
But very exciting. You're not going to want to miss this one. I have been pining for this one for quite some time. So this is a good one.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. Good stuff. Can't wait. Can't wait. Excited. Fresh. Exciting.
Yeah, it's good. you're very excited about it. You all right?
I am excited about it. I'm a little giddy about it, actually.
Excellent.
And I've been sitting on it for a while.
Well, stop sitting on stuff. What are you, a bird?
Well, it took a while to set up.
I'm just kidding.
It takes a while to get the okay and you know. And it's good. So anyway, so that's that. And so what do you want to do? You want to look back? You want to look back to move forward?
We can
forward?
Look back a little bit. What, so 2015, you got a 2015 postmortem here.
One of the things that we used to do at uni, and I've kind of off and on done this, is do a postmortem, as you probably did at the agencies. You do postmortems on projects and ask what worked and what didn't and what could use a little massaging to maybe work a little better. And I thought, you know, we talk a lot about what we like doing and maybe what we work on, but we don't really talk about how it works out. And I thought maybe we could spend a couple minutes respectively, kind of talking about what we thought worked over the last year, maybe what didn't work, and what may change or how we want to maybe course correct a little bit for the coming year. If that's okay.
Yeah, we can do that. Do you see your life as cut up into year chunks like that?
No, not really. I see my life more cut up into project chunks, into what I was working on at the time, because for so long I have defined myself, right or wrong, by what I do, not who I am, or which is kind of wonky, right? I mean, it's really wonky, actually, because it works that if I'm not doing the things that I think I should be doing, and that's completely arbitrary, but if I'm not doing those things, then that usually negatively affects my self-worth.
Right.
It negatively affects, you know, what I think of myself, because, if I'm not doing something really cool and great and wonderful, well, then I must not be cool and great and wonderful.
Right. Yeah.
And so for, you know, there have been a few realizations. One of the things that moving here was supposed to do was allow me to kind of let go of some of that shit for once and for all.
Right.
And try and work on who I want to be rather than what I want to be, and let what I do and what I want to be sort of come out of who I want to be, if that makes sense.
Okay. So wait, what you're doing should be a reflection of who you are, as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah. It's been my goal. One of the goals here was to try and take the focus and reflect it outward, change the focus outward instead of inward. Yeah. So instead of worrying about what I'm doing day to day, I focus on what's around me, who's around me, and out of that comes inspiration to do my own work.
Okay.
But it's just switching the focus. And I have found that so far I'm happier, which is
a good sign.
A nice switch.
Yep.
I still get spun up like you do. I mean, we've talked about this. I still call you and go, hey.
Well, why is it though that you and I, okay, we've talked about it a bunch of times, how we're happier when we're busier. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we ever let ourselves become not busy?
Well, sometimes it's not a choice. You know?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Look, it would be great if I don't know what magazines you like, what your dream list of magazines are, but let's say it's,
it'd be,
you know,
great if they all called me and
they all
I was
called
doing
and
stuff
said,
yeah,
so for the next, for the next, you know, 12 weeks, you know exactly what you're doing. That would be great.
Yeah.
You know, it would be great if, you know, whatever it is that I'm working on was just done. Like if I had some sort of producer that would go, okay, on Tuesday, you're talking to this person. On Friday, you're talking to this person. On Monday, you're going to write this and, you know, whatever. That would be great.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is, and this is probably for anybody out there listening who's trying to do something like this, is you spend the bulk of your time hustling, promoting, working on the business.
Yep.
And that's the lion's share. And the minority of the time is actually spent doing the creative work.
Yeah. It's the frustrating thing about having to work with other people is that a lot of your time is spent trying to organize other people.
Yeah. Now it can happen that it takes you in a completely different direction. You know, there's a project that we've got kind of behind the scenes going with a few different people. It's becoming something. I don't know what it's becoming, but we're having our first hangout meeting to talk about it today.
Right.
And I am so excited about the potential of what could be there and the potential collaboration of what could be there.
Yeah.
So I think for not only for 2015, but several years back, and it wasn't really a conscious reluctance, but my lack of collaboration, my lack of going external, I think limited what I was able to do. And by limiting what I was able to do, I limited how I could feel about myself.
Yeah, okay. Is that because you let that happen?
Sure. I mean, for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah.
You know, I look, we've all got our excuses. We've sure. all got our you know, things that we hold on to.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was incredibly liberating, although terrifying at the same time, was letting go of so much stuff. You know, when I came here, I mean, I've told you this. I taped out a square on my living room floor, and that was the size of my car. And other than books, if it didn't fit in the square, it was given away or sold, and it didn't come with me.
Sure.
And I tried to do that emotionally with some of the negative things that had piled up. You know, with right. some of the things that I had held on to for so. I mean, look. I've been holding on to the death of my parents really tightly.
Sure.
You know, I mean, we've talked about this a lot offline. Yeah. I've been holding on to that way too tightly. And I think it got to a point where it became unhealthy to hold on to it in the way that I was holding on to it. It became an excuse. It yeah. became an excuse for not moving forward.
Yep. Yeah.
You know? And I mean, you went through the same thing.
Sure.
Where you finally have to get to that point. And only you can tell you
when enough. It's time. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, enough. And I got to that point, you know, in coming here. That's part of what brought me here, was getting to that point of enough. And so I think for me moving forward, it really becomes not only about sharing more externally, but connecting more externally. Connecting with other people and being a part of their process, whether it's from a promotional standpoint or actually in the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I said last week, I would love to do something creative with you beyond this show. I mean, I think this show is terrific and I love it, but I think there could be a thing at the end of that, you know, like that we can both point to and go, we made that together.
Sure. Yeah. It's interesting that the things that you are pointing to as accomplishments of the last year are less concrete as far as final product, and more just a different way of going about it.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I do. I think that's true. But I think that that shift is allowing some concrete things to take shape.
Yeah.
You know, look, when did I do the sort of beta episodes of PD? A year and a half ago, and it didn't feel right. And then I tried again and it didn't feel right. And this, the first episode that I recorded for this new series, this new set of conversations, it felt really good. And it felt like now, maybe it was just timing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But a lot of other sort of guests fell into place. I've been working on an ebook project for a while that the bulk of the writing should be done in the next couple days. And then it goes into editing and layout, and hopefully it'll see the light of day February, maybe.
Have you ever noticed the other day I walked outside and it was, God, was it in the morning? I guess it was. It was cold and it was kind of dark. And I was waiting for Conrad to come downstairs. I think we were headed to the gym in the morning. And I'm standing outside on the street, and it's 6 a.m. and there's no one out there, you know. And I had this realization. I'm like looking down the street, and I always play these games in my own head about, you know, my own self-worth and you know, how I fit into the larger structure that is humanity, how I fit into the larger structure, which is like arts in New York, or, you know, all these kinds of things, right?
Sure.
And it's funny because when I meet other artists in all levels of the scale, rarely are they anything more than just, I mean, no, rarely. They never are anything more than just another person. You know, any.
How do you mean? What do you mean by that?
In the sense that, like, I've never met anybody who I thought to myself, "Wow, they're better. They're a better person than I am, and I understand why they are where they are."
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Almost always, whatever I've read or seen or even interviews that I've heard of anybody, musicians and authors and all these kinds of people, when it gets right down to it and you get them off their standard script because, you know, they've done a bunch of interviews and they say the same kind of thing about whatever book that they're promoting or whatever the thing is, right? They are just as uneloquent as anyone else. They are just as questioning as anyone else. They still have to do laundry this afternoon, you know?
Sure.
And it's this funny thing. And I was standing outside and I had this realization that it's like, well, I'm just as good as any of these people, you know, like as, I mean, in the general sense of
as good at being a person.
Well, I mean, ultimately I have as much potential as any of these people to be whatever it is that I want to be, you know, in the sense that there's nothing holding me back from being, however you define, the photographer that I want to be the person. See, I've always thought that I was a good person. I've just never thought that I was. It's funny the way that people label things in order to portray a certain way about themselves. Always feels incomplete to me, you know. If all you ever read is a bio where it says all the great things somebody's done, it's like, well, yeah, but there's you're that's only 25% of their life is these great things that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it's all this other stuff and probably 25% really crappy things that they've done.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Go read Cash by Johnny Cash.
Exactly. Right. 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 And 50 years on, you get the full story because you get to read the book that someone wrote as some memoir. You know. But oftentimes it's like you look at what people are doing and of course, especially with social media and stuff, you're never getting the full story. You know, you're getting this sort of very tightly focused version of what it is that they want you to know about whatever they're working on or, mm-hmm, you know, how they're working mm-hmm. on it. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
And so I came to this realization that, you know, where I am is actually a pretty good position to be in the sense that I have the work behind me that I'm happy with, and I have work ahead of me that I'm happy that I'm like excited to be part of, and that there's really nothing about me that's any different from anyone who is as successful as I would like to be, you know. Except
then why are they?
Well, the, you know,
why are they more successful? If that's the case, then it can't all be external. It can't all be just dumb luck.
No, it's not dumb. I mean, I think a lot of it is that is the mindset of questioning whether or not you're good enough. Is it just eats up so many cycles. And for what? If you're not good enough, you're not good enough.
It sounds like you're putting a lot of it down to perception. It sounds like you're saying,
I think a lot of it is perception, in your own head or externally.
Hmm.
You disagree?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I do. Like I am not the writer that Stephen King is or William Gibson is.
Of course. And I'm not saying that I'm the photographer that Avedon was. What I'm saying is that I am a person who makes photographs and there's nothing about me as a person that would stop me from getting where I want to go. It's not like I am less than by definition. See what I'm saying?
Okay. So then what? Okay. Okay.
But I think that myself, I think a lot of other people out there spend a lot of time trying to figure out where you fit into some larger hierarchy, but that hierarchy, I don't know that hierarchy really exists. You know, I mean, I think that there's people who are more successful than others and people who make work that other people like and that kind of stuff. But I don't think it has anything to do with them. I don't know. It's like they're not special. They've just been more successful in the same way that, like, you know, your average rich person isn't special because they're rich. They're just somebody who has a Birkin bag, you know. Like, and if you could look at that and think that that's special, but really that's not really special. It just means they had $60,000 to spend on a piece of leather, you know? It's a different thing.
Okay. Yeah. But it sounds like then again, you're taking the responsibility or the burden off of your own ability and or
no. I don't mean effort. To do that at all. What I'm saying is that No. If anything, I'm saying the exact opposite. What I'm saying is that sitting and overanalyzing and trying to place yourself and figure out in some way, like this, figuring out the self-worth thing and sort of questioning your self-worth all the time is a completely fruitless effort is what I'm saying.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
You know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do the work and what I know. Absolutely. You should do all that. But I'm saying you should instead of spending 30% of your time comparing yourself all the time, screw the comparisons, you know, comparisons, you have no control over any of that stuff. The only thing you have control over is your own output.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. You're exactly right. I can't control what people are going to think of Project X.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But that being said, I think you have to look at the reactions to Project X so that you can course correct.
Yes, but that's assuming that the people who are judging it are right.
They may not be right, but they pay your salary.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Right.
I mean, for example, you did your promo cards that you sent out.
Yep.
You sent those out for a reason.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
And you sent them out. You seem to have been very purposeful in how you chose who you sent those out to.
Yes.
So there had to be something on the other side of that. To help make that choice. It wasn't random.
No, but I mean, a lot of that choice of those people was suggestions by my agent of people to write to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't think that chasing what somebody else wants me to be is a worthwhile endeavor. You know, like the thing is that
qualify that for a minute.
Okay.
What someone wants you to be, how? As a person or the type of work?
Well, the work that I do. Well, the one thing that I have.
If it's type of work, I disagree because you're making product.
Yes. But the thing is that my product that I make, the stuff that I tend to want to do myself, is well within the scope of commercial photography. Right. Like, I'm not doing something that's so outlandish that I'm waiting for the world to catch up to me.
Sure.
You
sure.
What I'm
sure.
Saying?
Yeah.
I'm already zeroed in somewhere in the mostly conservative end of portrait photography, which is fine for me because that's the stuff I like doing. If I was way out there and said, why don't people like these pictures I take of people's feet as portraits or something, you know, then
foot portraiture.
Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. So then how do you quantify, if you even can, I mean, maybe you can't, how do you quantify, let's say, gosh, I don't know, the difference between you and, I don't know, Miller Mobley or Keatley even?
Yeah, sure. I don't know.
What is it about their work that appeals to their market and your work that appeals to your market, and why are they separate, or why is, you know what I'm trying to say?
Why are they making more money than me?
I don't know how much they make, so I don't know. But there's a different, it seems to be a different audience. And if you're all playing the same,
I don't know that. Well, see, you're putting a lot of things in there. One, I don't know that. I mean, yes, it's the same audience in the sense that similar people would hire me as hire them. But you know, I know a lot of portrait photographers that are way better than me that I think are as good or better than the guys you listed who are not getting those jobs too. So that to me makes me think that what you're saying is that, like, why isn't your work as good as theirs?
I'm not making a judgment call on good or bad at all.
Okay. So, well, you know, I know about this industry, though, is that it's a lot about getting in the room, which I've been doing more of lately, and meeting people and less about absolute
I guess quality. I'm asking if it's not the work.
Yeah.
That's keeping you from being where you want to be.
Yeah. Then what is it?
Then what is it?
Well, that's the thing. I think it's my own brain. Honestly.
In what way? How?
I'm like, self-defeating. You know.
But how? You seem to be confident. You seem to be. You seem to know where you want to go.
I think I put on a good show of knowing where I want to go. I don't know where I want to go. I mean, I feel like I know the direction of where I want to go, but I can't.
It really does. In all the time that we have talked about this, you seem to me.
I mean, I know the kind of work that I want to make, mm-hmm. but I am not. Good.
Are you making it now?
Yeah, I think I am. I'm not making as much of it for the clients that I want to be making it for, but that those two things are not directly related. You know what I mean?
Wait, say that again.
Like, I'm making the kind of work I want to make. There are clients who like the kind of work that I like to make. I'm not making it for as many of them as I would like, but that those things are not necessarily directly related.
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I
have the perception that you, and this is odd to me, Bill, that you know where you want to be, but now it seems that maybe you're saying that you don't know exactly.
Well,
you know what
it is? I know what I don't want to be. And okay. I think that's different than knowing where you want to be.
Is that an easier distinction?
For me, much easier.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I can point to, you know, the kind of work that I don't want to make.
Mm-hmm.
Pointing to the work that I do want to make, that's a harder thing to do, you know? Pointing at the person that I don't want to be, like, I don't want to be that guy, he's a hypocrite or whatever. That's easier than doing the opposite.
In your body of work,
yeah.
And go back as far as you need to, is there a photograph or a selection of photographs that you can point to and go, if I could do that every day or, you know, is there something, have you hit it and now you're chasing it, or have you not yet found it?
I think if you go to my site, what comes up on the first page is the kind of photographs I'd like to make.
Okay, so that to you,
sure,
is where you want to be all the time.
Yeah, I would love to do this stuff all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But I've always had a problem with defining where it is. There are a lot of people who, when they're in high school, they're in college, they know exactly where they're going to be at 35.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to law school. I'm going to get this job. I'm going to meet a woman. I'm going to get married. And I'm going to have 2.3 kids and live in this part of town. You know, I never had any dreams as a child of what it is that I wanted to be when I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And still to this day, I mean, I can talk. I mean, like, look, I'd like to have my career become more successful over time and like all the things that everyone always wants. Right. Like the vague notions of it are all there.
Is it the specifics that seem more elusive?
Yeah, what is it? What are those? Like, what is the specifics? What am I supposed to, like, this is the magazine I want to work for? Like, that just feels so trite, because I've done that before. There are magazines I want to work for, and I went and worked for them, and it's just like, okay, I worked for them. What did that mean? What is that?
See, that's an odd word, trite. I mean, for someone who grew up going, I want to work for the Washington Post, and then they get a job as a photojournalist for the Washington Post, to call that trite seems odd.
Well, that's their thing. I'm saying for me, it feels like that's not a big enough goal. Any concrete goal seems small in the metaphysical sense of the word, you know?
So what should the goal be? Or what should it be for you? Or what is it for you?
For me, it's enjoying what it is that I do. And mm-hmm. that's really where I lay down the line.
So there's no association. Maybe that's the wrong word. But there's no connection between where it ends up after you've finished it. You Does your interest end at doing the work?
Do I feel good that some picture I took is on the side of a bus? Sure, it's great, cool. It's on the side of a bus, mm-hmm. but like if it, it, but is that really that's the best goal I can come up with? Is that I want my picture on the side of a bus? You see what I'm saying? Like it just mm-hmm. it feels mm-hmm. like that's such a like a it's like okay, who cares? It's on the side of a bus. Like yes, it's great, super glad it happened, but like does that really make me a complete human being? You know, like it's that's what I mean when I say that those goals feel really small, is that they just feel it's the sort of it's the artistic equivalent of consumption. You know, it's like mm-hmm. I'm going to get this car because that'll make me happy. It's like, well, that's not true. You know,
I don't know that it has to make you happy, but it can certainly represent a milestone. You
sure.
know, getting a cover on Rolling Stone might not make you happy, but as a photographer, yeah. that's a certain benchmark that you can aspire to and
that
also
you can
point to.
Yes, it is because otherwise, without those benchmarks, it's very hard to figure out what you've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And do you think about your career in terms of those types of benchmarks? Like this might help move the chain forward. This might help move the needle.
Yeah, but the problem with that is that if I say my goal in 2016 is to have a feature in Vanity Fair or something, right? And uh-huh. I don't reach that for whatever reason, because it doesn't happen, like then I'm going to feel crappy for something that was an arbitrary deadline in the first place. See what I'm saying?
I do, but then what do you ever shoot for? How do you ever?
I have not figured out the answer to that question.
Okay.
I mean,
an answer that makes sense and that doesn't feel contrived.
Yeah. Like I've made goals like that before, but and even the ones that I've accomplished, it was, you know, it's sort of like, well, that's, I mean, you could even say, look, you could look at the 2007 Daily Portrait, the 365 portraits. Like, okay, I did that. And it mm-hmm. became a big thing, and I shot a different person every day for a year and all this kind of stuff. And at the end of the year, I got a lot of really nice notes from a lot of very nice people. And it was an accomplishment, but that was like my own goal in my own head. And that's kind of why it was successful.
Would mentally. That have felt more, would that have felt better to you just accomplishing it than, because you've gotten featured on some pretty big sites.
Yeah, because of that, right.
Because did the success feel better than the accomplishment of doing it?
No, the accomplishment of doing it felt better than anything.
Okay.
You know, the accomplishment of doing it was the only reason to do it. In the sense that all the other stuff that came from it, that was great ancillary stuff, but it was only there because of the goodwill that I generated in my own head about it. You see what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying?
Because mm-hmm.
I had this goal and I completed this goal and you know, you get nice notes from people, heroes of yours, saying, wow, that's a really good project. Like, you know,
right.
congratulations. And like, I remember I got an email from...
But it doesn't pay the bills.
No. It doesn't
and that's
pay
what,
the bills.
I think that's what a lot of our listeners are struggling with too is yeah, that's great, but... How do I factor in making at least a partial living from this?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I get a lot of satisfaction from the work that I do. You know, the magazines I do work for, I get satisfaction. Right. I enjoy doing those shoots. You know, I don't think I've ever had a photographic job. I mean, other than when I first started, I shot two weddings for friends and mm-hmm. the pictures came out fine and stuff. It just was not what I enjoyed doing.
But would you say that was more of a struggle creatively than the type of work that you do?
No, it just felt like a slog. Like I just didn't enjoy it, you know?
Okay.
You ever meet people who, I was thinking about this yesterday. What was I thinking in context with? I was thinking about the fact that like, if I have a shoot tomorrow, which I don't tomorrow, but let's say I had one tomorrow, mm-hmm. tonight I would pack up all my gear and put it in a box and I'd have to go take a cab or a train out to some place to go meet some person, take their picture to come back. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, the idea of like, oh, I got to get on the train and I got to go out there and it just, oh, I got to set up the gear and all this kind of stuff. Like to me, all of that stuff is just sort of transparent and I just look through it because what it is that I really want to be doing is taking the pictures of that person and connecting with that person. Mm-hmm. Where for a lot of people, the sort of the minutia of the job, which is the organizing and setup and travel and all that crap, would be overwhelming. Kind of make, like, I used to have a job in high school where I worked as a waiter in this like old age home kind of place. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, I used to get there and I used to have feel sick to my stomach even going to the job, you know.
Why?
I couldn't. It was very stressful because they would sit down, you know, five or six tables all at the same time, and you'd have to handle all of those tables at the same time.
Okay, so it was the work that was stressful, not the environment, really.
No, not the environment. It just made me miserable being there doing it, you know. And mm-hmm, photography mm-hmm. never makes me feel miserable. So there's that part of it, you know. It's an interesting thing.
So new year.
Yep.
What does your 2016 look like in terms of, do you see where you'd like to be at the end of it? Do you see what you would like to have done by the end of it? Do you think about promotion more so than
I did last year?
Why?
Because I've had some meetings recently with some agencies and stuff that went well, and it's not even like whether or not I get a gig anytime soon from them, but it's just sort of this sense that, you know what? I like being in that room. I need to get in that room more because I'm good in that room. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. It feels like whenever you're cold calling or cold writing or sending postcards to people, whatever it is. I mean, there's a billion people doing that.
Right.
My skill is the fact that I can talk to anybody about anything. So get me in the room. Let me talk to them. Let me talk them through my work. Let me show them why I'm passionate about this, that, and the other thing, and how I came about this idea, and all that kind of stuff.
Do you see the type of work changing this year? Does it have to change to get you into the types of rooms that you want to be in?
No.
Ooh, there's a good one.
No, I don't think it does.
Okay.
I think I need to do more, but I always have to do more. But you know, like I had a meeting a few weeks back, and like I had my portfolios and my agent had put together, she puts my books together.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing physical books or is it electronic?
Physical books.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which are heavy and annoying, and we'll put that for another time.
Right.
But although the people I showed them to were like, oh, physical books. They were like excited to look at actual prints. Mm-hmm. But I was sitting there and I was on the train out to this place, and I'm like flipping through the books that just to see like what's in them, so that I can get some idea of, you know, when they're flipping through that, what they're going to see.
So had you not seen what your agent chose up to that point?
I know what prints she has available to her, but she puts, you know, she sort of customizes the book for
a long time. Kind of tailors it to the meeting.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And I'm flipping through it, and there were a lot of pictures in there that I had either forgotten about or hadn't seen in a while, or, you know, that kind of thing. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that one. That's a good picture. And, you know, that kind of thing. And by the time I got to the end of it, there was no part of me that felt like, oh, I'm going to walk into this room and I'm going to be embarrassed by my work.
Oh,
I was entire.
Yeah,
well, sure.
I can't imagine you being embarrassed by anything that you've done.
Not embarrassed, but there's like a, you know, the idea that like, oh, he's like, what? That one's not that good. You know what I mean? Like that sort of feeling. Like there was nothing in my books that made me feel that way, including a lot of stuff that was a few years old. And it gave me a little bit of a sense of, yeah, this is totally the kind of work that you want to do is entirely within your grasp and your level of skill.
So again, what needs to change?
You say
you want to get into these rooms, but how do you get in to those rooms if not by the cold calls, the cold, you know, the mailers, that
relationships
kind of thing? Yeah. So how do you build them?
Well, you have an agent that helps. And you know, you start talking to everyone you know who's in that industry.
Yeah.
You know,
in that industry that you're kind of targeting.
Yeah. Or in the photo industry in general, you know, but it's funny because a lot of it is less about absolute quality and more about exposure. There's lots of people who will look at, say, my work and be like, oh, wow, this is really great. I hadn't seen your work before, you know. So it's not that they've ever seen my work and they discounted it. It's that they've never seen my work. Right. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's like a big part of it. We seem to think that you go make this stuff and you put it up on your website, that because it's up there or that you send stuff out, that people have actually looked and maybe they haven't looked.
I think even though it's up there, nobody's seen it.
There's this weird sense that, like, how could you not have seen my work? I've been doing this for years. I've been sending you this kind of stuff, you know?
Right.
And then the minute they actually look at it, they go, oh, wow, this is really good. We should work together. It's like, great. Thank you. You know?
Right.
So sometimes it takes those sorts of, those things. But I think what I was getting at initially, just to come round again, is there was this, I've had this sense that, because I've done all this work and I have, you know, hundreds of images that I'm proud of behind me that are at the level that I want them to be, that because I haven't been getting as much of the work that I want to get, it must mean because those aren't good enough and I need to do a billion more. Like, oh, I guess I'm not there yet. I need to do a billion more. And I'm not saying that I don't need to keep working and improving, because I think that just happens naturally as you progress.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a certain sense of, no, the work I have is good enough to get the kind of work I'm getting. I need to do more stuff in the future that inspires me and when I come up with ideas. But it's not like I'm starting from zero.
Sure.
Have you ever felt that
you needed to start from zero again? Have you ever felt that you wanted to just, you know...
Yeah, you know,
hit
I
the
have,
delete
actually.
Button. Last year, Coachy Hernandez did that on Instagram. He deleted everything, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photos, and started from scratch.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt that way?
I have, but it would take me, the kind of work that I do, it would take me a very long time to rebuild it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I can't just go shoot for a week and have another 60 photos, you know?
Right.
It doesn't work that way. But yeah, there's definitely a part of me the idea that, okay, you know, I'm going to take everything that's on my drive and I'm just going to put it on an external and I'm going to stick it in the closet and I'm going to start from complete scratch.
Right.
But it's like, but what does that accomplish? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, unless you're going in just such a different aesthetic direction.
Exactly.
But even then, it would be helpful to see what came before.
I think that that's more of a mind trick than mm-hmm. a reality. Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you feel, let me ask you this. Do you feel more optimistic about the professional side of Bill Wadman this year than you did going into last year, even if you even remember going into last year?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it's funny because this last year was actually a big year for me personally, because I went and got married and all the rest of it, you know? So, I mean, well, there's,
yeah,
you know, so it's funny. 2015 was a big year for me, period. But 2016, I think, would be a bigger year for me professionally,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I don't know. Sorry to get off on a long
No,
rant.
No, that's all right. It kind of, can we switch these around?
Since yeah, we kinda, can do that.
This kind of goes in there. Cause we got it. You want
to, what are you going to say? Go ahead. You can,
well, we got a question. We got a question about changes in the industry, and it kind of dovetails with what you've been finding in some of these meetings, I would imagine.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that I was listening
to... Who sent this in, by the way? Do we remember?
I don't know. It was somebody in the Q&A, so I guess we could scroll down and
okay,
find
so,
it. Okay,
so listener question, can you talk about some of the changes in the industry?
Yeah.
From our perspective, which who knows what that is.
Well, I guess that's part of the problem with the whole concept of the industry. It was Tom Fowler who wrote in.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
It was, what are your thoughts on the industry as a whole? There's no right way to become a successful photographer. Everything's so fractured. And I think that that's partly the point, is that I can only see the industry from my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the same way that Ryan Bernheiser can only see it from his point of view as like a fancy wedding photographer. You know?
Yeah.
And I can also only see it from my point of view as to how successful I've been and what I'm trying to accomplish. You know, to somebody who's been rocking and rolling and, you know, we're living on expense accounts for the last 10 years doing like big advertising gigs. Well, maybe the industry for them is changing in a negative way because the budgets aren't as big as they were before. You know what I mean? Like, where for me, the budgets are just fine. I just need to get the gig.
Right.
So it's like a different way of going at it. Which is why it makes it so difficult to even comment on this that much. But I was listening to a show about what's a podcast? I think it was a cinematographer thing. I listen to a lot of cinematography mm-hmm. crap. And they were saying, you know, the thing for the last couple of years where it's like, oh, so-and-so got the job and they chose him because he had more followers on Twitter or whatever it is, you know, those sort of Instagram
kind of
things.
Which it is a thing.
Yeah, it is a thing. But it was funny because these guys were saying that's actually in their world, that is actually lessened in the last year or so.
Hmm.
That people realize that it's sort of a empty number. And that it doesn't really equate to much right. in the results right. end of things. And it's like, okay, well, that's an interesting thing if what they're saying is true. And these were really successful guys. So you know, everything ebbs and flows, right? Everything's changing all the time. Who knows where it's going to lead, you know?
You know, it's interesting. On New Year's Eve, I had a terrific conversation with a guy who's in marketing for Discovery, formerly at Disney. Mm-hmm. Miramax. I mean, long list of really terrific projects and terrific companies. And we got to talking about photography, and I said, you know, part of the change is you guys already have an idea of what you want. And when you hire somebody, you're not necessarily hiring them for what they've done. You're hiring them with the idea that they can do what you need them to do.
You think that's different than it was before?
I think that, yes, in certain circumstances. I think that I have romanticized it, as probably many others, of the days of Kappa or even Penn, where, you know, Time or Life or whatever would send you away for a month and say, come back with 12 pictures. I don't care what they're of.
Okay, yeah. But that was 40, 50 years ago. I think in the last 30 years, it's been not that different than today.
Well, one of the interesting things, I you know, if you're hiring somebody like Annie Leibovitz,
right.
You know, you're hiring her for because she can shoot what you've already got the brief. And he and his comment was, if I'm hiring Annie Leibovitz, I don't care what she shoots. I'm hiring her for her name.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people like that. But the people who are like that.
I'm buying the name kind of thing.
Right, right.
But go ahead.
Well, there aren't that many people like that, though.
No. But the point I was trying to make was, it was going to be a question to you. Would you be satisfied knowing that that's what got you in the door? The name rather than the work?
Yes, because I would only have a name because of the work. People don't like Annie Leibovitz because she's like from some rich family or something like that. They want her because she's made lovely work in the past. You see what
right.
I'm saying?
And still does.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. I'm just saying that like they're basing her on past work. You know what I mean?
I think I would love to have a conversation.
I think her work in the last 10 years is better than her work in the 10 years prior.
I would agree with that.
Almost everybody is improving with time, you know.
Well, and going in different directions.
Yeah.
I still love the rawness of the stuff that she did with the Stones, not to digress too much, when she was on tour, that there's that one shot of Mick in the Air that's like one of my favorite rock and roll shots ever.
And it's funny because like there's an example of something where you can't ever get to no one sits in the pit like that and is able to take pictures at that level. You know what I mean? No one goes on tour for an entire tour with somebody anymore. Like that doesn't exist.
Not
okay.
True.
Okay. That doesn't exist if they're like being hired by Rolling Stone to go on a tour for the whole time. You know what I mean? Like the Rolling Stones may hire a photographer and Rolling Stone may send a photographer to a Rolling Stones show, but they're going to have to sign away all their rights to the Rolling Stones, you know, all these like writers and all this kind of crazy crap. It's not like the old days when you could go take pictures of a musician and those are your pictures of the musician. You know, it's all very tightly controlled now. It's a different world.
Yeah. I mean, look, one of the guys that I'm wanting to talk to is a guy named Greg Nolan, and he it's kind of funny, I found his work as a quick aside through a book that he did for a band called Bastille.
Bastille.
And I had never heard their music, but I saw his pictures,
right?
And he went on tour with them for a year, I think it was a year. And they ended up doing this book, and the book was fantastic. And I thought, wow, I haven't seen this type of work. And it reminded me very much of the intimacy and the sort of backstage-ness of the early Annie stuff.
Sure, yeah.
And I'd love to talk to him about, you know, that very question, because you and I have kind of wondered about this. Is this access available anymore? And if it is, what are you giving up to get it?
Yeah.
If anything, who knows?
Yeah, that's true. You should get that guy in there. I want to hear it.
Yeah. Well, he's a terrific guy. He's been traveling. And he and his lady just started a nonprofit. They do pro bono photography and writing for causes they believe in.
Oh, that's a good idea.
To kind of elevate the perception or elevate, you know, the level of discourse around these types of projects.
Yeah.
So trying to get him in.
I think the industry is... Look, I think it's always changing, but I think it's changing less than maybe. I think maybe the change has slowed down. I think between 2008.
Wait, how do you mean? There's still change happening, but it's not as dramatic year over year.
Yeah, I think it's plateaued. I think that the industry is not going to change as much in the next 2 years as it has in the last two or three. My own personal view of it. I feel like it's like leveled out a little bit. I think the revolution has come and happened, and now we're all trying to figure out how to pick up the pieces on the other side of the revolution. But that it's not like the entire world is going to continue to shift the way it has in the last 5 years or so, you know? Or at least it hasn't changed for the people who were heavily affected in the last 5 years by how the photography world has changed. Nothing has changed. Nothing's gotten any worse for them in the last year or two, you know?
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the huge influx of digital photography and everyone getting cameras and everyone wanting to be a photographer and all that kind of stuff, that stuff still exists. But I think there's a lot of people who went to go become pro photographers and didn't make enough money at it and then went back to something else and are doing it as amateurs. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if the gold rush is over.
I don't know if I like that sentence.
Maybe. I don't know.
I think it just feels a little dismissive.
Oh, I don't think it's I'm not saying it's dismissive at all. I'm saying it's a hard slog and a lot of people don't want to do it, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, like I used to make more money than I make now, but I'm okay with not making a ton of money. Mm-hmm. It's not my goal.
Right.
You know, if I want to make a ton of money, A, I wouldn't be in photography and B, I wouldn't be doing portrait photography, you know?
That's right.
I'd be shooting weddings and making $5,000 a day or whatever the hell the high-end wedding photographer
you'd
guys make.
You'd be up there in where's was it Mike that came down with that amazing?
Oh yeah. With I'd have a 300mm 2.8 lens.
Right. Yep. God, that lens was a thing of beauty.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's
I'm not a huge gear person, but damn, that thing was beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful technology, right?
Yeah. Sure.
But
okay.
I don't mean it to be dismissive at all. I think that there are a lot of people making gorgeous images more than there ever have been. But I think less of them are trying to make a living doing it.
You know, you decide you want to be a professional photographer and then decide that you know it was too much work. That feels a little.
I'm not saying decide that it's too much work. I'm saying decided that they can't make enough money for themselves doing it.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know. And that's just a reality of it. You know, the amount of people making 150, 200 grand a year, even in photography, is not as many as even the people in photography who act like they make 200 grand a year want to say.
You know, that's a good point. I would love to see some data and I don't know where you'd find it.
Well, the problem with it is that it's all perception. Right.
Well, okay, but
if you
that's
are a
where
successful photographer, you want to even if you're not successful, you want to look like you're successful because people want to hire a successful guy.
Right. So that's kind of where I'm going. How does reach equate to value, like real value? You know, is there a direct correlation between having, you know, 500,000 Instagram followers? Does that translate into real money, or is it fake money? Is it just fake fame?
I don't know. I mean, how many are there that actually have 500,000? A couple hundred? I mean, that's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people.
You know what I'm saying? But like even the people who have 20,000 followers on whatever. You know, I have friends that have 15,000 followers on Instagram mm-hmm. who aren't even professional photographers, you know?
Yeah, it's an odd thing. I mean, somebody like Marquez, MKBHD, mm-hmm. I think he's at 3 million followers.
Yeah, but he's like one of the biggest guys on YouTube.
But what does that equate to? I guess that's where I'm saying. Is there tangible value?
Well, it is for him because he's not making things from scratch. He's reviewing other people's stuff. So his audience matters because the whole point of him is to have an audience.
Sure.
See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's different than somebody who's painting.
Good point.
And whoever sees their stuff. I mean, he's being paid theoretically or you know, getting stuff to review. Does he do advertising on his shows? How does he make money?
You know, I can't remember.
Are there front bumpers?
I can't remember now. If there are,
well, he's also like still living in his mom in his like home bedroom, isn't he?
I don't know. I don't know if he's lived. Maybe that's just his room in his house. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, he started when he was like 16 or something, right?
Yes.
But here's the thing: there were a lot of other guys who probably started doing review podcasts when they were 16. You know,
sure.
Is it that his reviews are that great? Because I mean, I've seen some of his reviews and they're good. They're not like, oh my God, this is the best review I've ever heard. Good, you know? So why is it that he stands out?
Why does Marquez stand out? Couple things. He's very knowledgeable.
Yep.
He's interested. And he doesn't strike me as elitist about it. He seems very approachable.
Okay.
And I think that's a pleasant experience. He doesn't come off as I don't know.
See, it's funny you say that because I have watched some reviews of his where he would talk about some spec and like, oh, this spec's really important when it was something that was ridiculous, you know, like nowadays when they have 500 DPI screens as opposed to 350 DPI screens and like, oh, this one's higher res, so it's better. It's like, well, you can't even see that with your own eyes. So like,
but he's coming at it from a gearhead perspective.
Right. Where what he should say is, yes, this one has higher res, which, you know, is technically better, but you're not actually going to see it anyway. So, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I wish that there was a little more corrective opinion in some of the things. Just to pull him, you know, to use him. So I'm just saying that it's an interesting thing that he's in a special situation because he has his followers equate entirely to whether it's worth sending him stuff to review.
Right.
You know.
Well, and then there's somebody like what's the guy? PewDiePie.
PewDiePie,
who's,
right.
Who's got like 15 million followers.
Have
and
you
just...
ever listened to him play, watched him play?
Yes.
Is it good?
No.
So what is it?
I don't know. Maybe it's a guilty pleasure thing. I find it pretty annoying.
Is it a bunch of kids who watch him play?
I don't know, but he's got such mass and fair play. The iOS game, the PewDiePie iOS game, is supposed to be pretty cool. I have not played it, but
he has his own game.
Yeah, it's like an adventure game. But Touch Arcade really liked it.
Okay.
Anyway, we're getting.
I deleted the only game off my phone yesterday.
You don't have any games on your phone?
Now I have zero games on my phone. I had one game. Actually, I still have Real Racing 3, which I never play. But I had Unblock Me, which I've been addicted to, but I did 1,000 of the puzzles. And I said, you know what? I just spent time doing 1,000 puzzles. For what? And I was like, delete. Like, this is a waste. This is a waste of time.
It's concentration, man.
Games feel... I mean, I used to be really into role-playing games, Wizardry and Bard's Tale and Might and Magic and all that stuff. And they were some of the happiest moments of my childhood. But now it's just like, I just can't justify playing any of that stuff. Anyway.
You'd rather go to the gym and row yourself to nowhere.
Row myself to health, baby. I want to be
alive.
You're
on the row to nowhere.
Cute. I like that. Huh? I actually took the day off yesterday because I have blisters that made me so I can't row.
I got blisters on my fingers.
That's right. We are at a like a little over an hour. You wanna? We'll save the size thing till next week.
Or we can save the. Is it a big thing?
The size thing.
I see what I did there.
That was cute.
Yeah, whatever you want to do. Okay,
let's put that up there.
Why don't you talk about building it beautiful? It's a new year.
It is a new year.
People are going to want to build themselves
a new website.
A new website.
Why would anyone want to build a new website?
Because with Squarespace, it's so damn easy. It's so easy to build a site. No, it's so easy. It's so easy.
Is that your new song?
Might be.
I like that one. That's not bad. I like that. I like that a lot. Hey, Squares, you guys know this stuff. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. I use Squarespace all the time. You know what are really great is the apps that they have for the phone.
Like the iOS, portfolio app.
And the metric
stats app.
Yeah, and you can like write your blogs from there. And they even have that little note app, which lets you like keep notes and upload them to places, which is super good. Oh, it's like a little note taking app.
Will it sync if you have notes on the site? Is it real time? Like, if you update the note on the app, will it update the note on the site? Or is it just an iOS?
The note thing? is just for you, essentially.
Because that would be kind of cool, like real-time publishing on their site.
Yeah. You can actually. Oh, I see what you're saying. So, like, there's a blog app that you have that you can just open up any blog entry and add and delete all on the phone, which is great too.
Like, if Squarespace could do a Google Apps, like a Google Docs app type thing.
Oh, we should tell them to do that.
That would be cool.
Squarespace, do it just for us.
Yeah.
Your website will be simple, powerful, and beautiful. And Squarespace is always there when you need them. They offer 24/7 support via live chat and email. And it starts at just $8 a month. So you get a free domain name if you buy Squarespace for the year. So you want to get, hotmutton.com. Probably is already taken.
Wait, what?
Say
that again?
If you want to sell... what is mutton? Is that lamb or goat? Lamb?
Is it sheep?
Sheep? Okay. So you want to sell sheep meat and you want hotmutton.com, you can go on to Squarespace, buy a year at $8 a month, and you'll get your hotmutton.com domain name for free. You don't have to pay the extra $15 to somebody else. Every site made on Squarespace is automatically going to be responsive, so your website scales and looks great on any device, which, let me tell you, the more I use other people's websites and I try to...
It is available. Hotmutton.com.
It is?
Yeah. You know Freddie Clark's all clickety clickety clickety.
Yeah. Your website's going to be responsive. You know, I was looking at what was I looking at the other day?
Mutton.
You know what's not good? Wikipedia's use of tables. So if there's like, you look up, I don't know, World War II, and you're looking up like casualty data or whatever it is. Like, their tables do not respond well. Like, you can't even see. You can't even scroll over to see them. They go off the screen, but you can't scroll over to get to them. See what I'm saying? You ever have that problem in a mobile browser? It's been driving me crazy lately. You know what? Wikipedia should just move over to Squarespace.
Right.
They got e-commerce. Every site comes with a free online store, which is super useful. And I used to sell some prints a few weeks ago. And I used for gifts for our wedding, which was really super. They got cover pages. It's a feature that allows you to set up a beautiful one-page online presence in just minutes. So you want to put up a site of your opening hours and your location and something really quick and easy for your new restaurant you're opening called Hot Mutton. You can do that. You can do that in just minutes. So go get started with your free trial. You have no credit card is required. You can start building your website today. And when you sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code OTP to get 10% off and to show your support for On Taking Pictures.
It's so easy to build your site.
Nice. That was a good one.
It's so easy. It's out of sight.
So thank you very much to Squarespace for their continued support of 5x5 and On Taking Pictures.
It's so easy. It's
Squarespace, build it beautiful.
So doggone easy. It's so easy.
Is that the line, doggone easy?
Yes.
God. See, you've got a few years on me, so you actually heard that on the radio the first time it came out.
Yeah, I had it on 8-track.
Did you really?
No.
8-tracks.
Not
remember
that
8-tracks?
I do remember them.
Oh my God. I went into Penguin. You know Penguin clothes?
No.
Okay, it's a clothing company.
Penguin Clothes?
Penguin, yeah. Oh. I don't know Penguin?
No.
Anyway, it's a clothing company. And they had a big sale the other day, and their shirts fit me. So I went in, and I was looking at these shirts, and what was the song that was on? What is Crisscross? Crisscross will make you jump.
Oh yeah, Daddy Mac will make you, sure. They wore their baseball jerseys backwards.
Yeah, and their pants I think backwards.
Oh really?
Yeah. I think they wore their shoes backwards too, which was very uncomfortable for them.
Bound feet.
Anyway, it was on, and like the kids at the store were like singing along and like dancing around the store because it was kind of dead after Christmas, and. And they were like, oh my God, this song came out like when I was like -3. And I was like, I was a junior in high school when this song
came out. You remember the video.
Yes. And they just looked at me and the guy was like, no way you're that old. And I was just like, yep, I'm that old. And
for
so,
real, yo.
And so is she. This kid was born in 1995.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, right?
I've got shoes older than you.
That's what I'm saying. We're now the guys who say that.
I've got t-shirts a little older than you.
Oh my God.
Ugh.
It's just wrong.
Hey, last week, was it Alan that asked? Yeah, Alan. Alan asked about medium formattiness.
Yes.
And
now we have even more medium formattiness.
Yeah. So FaZe have released, actually, I don't know if it's out yet, but 100 megapixel.
It's coming out. Sony. I think it'll be available soon. Yeah. Later this month.
100 megapixel Sony CMOS sensor.
Yeah, which is really interesting. And it has 16-bit color, which is odd for a CMOS technology. So that'll be interesting to see what they actually get out of that. 15 stops of dynamic range, you know, ISO 50 to 12,800. I'll be interested to see if this makes the price of the 50 megapixel Sony sensor come down, or if they will make a new 50 megapixel Sony sensor. You know,
look at the exposure times ranging from 1/4,000th of a second to 60 minute exposures while still retaining the 1/600th flash sync.
No, 1/1600th flash sync
when used with phase one leaf shutter lenses.
Yeah, you got to use the leaf. You got the leaf shutter to do the fast flash sync. It's pretty cool. Now, granted, this is
$43,990.
And that's just for the digital back, not for the body, not for the lenses. So you're spending $60,000 on this camera. Now, is it worth $60,000? Well, you know, I guess if you're making tons and tons of money and you need it. And 100 megapixels is a lot of information.
Right.
You know, it's maddening amounts of information. Arguably more, this is more than anybody but very, very specialized people need. But for somebody who, you know, was shooting large format before, or really does need to make billboards that they also need to crop into for the same ad or whatever it is, or landscape people or what have you, you know, if I was independently wealthy, would I buy this camera? Sure. But that's a lot of money. It's crazy though. I mean, look at that. Look what you can do now for, how much is the Canon one? $3,300. You get a 50 megapixels. It's ridiculous. You know, and if you're shooting landscapes, just shoot snap, snap, snap and pan, you know, put a pano together and you'll get 120 megapixels, which is pretty crazy. Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, it's funny. Sony, I love the idea that I remember somewhere in one of the articles about this that I found and read, it was like, oh, phase one works with Sony to develop this new 100 megapixel sensor. It's like, no, Sony developed the 100 megapixel sensor. And they said, hey, phase, you want to buy this?
Yeah, I wonder.
What?
I wonder, like, realistically, how much of a stranglehold does Sony have over the camera industry?
Well, now they have a whole lot, right? Because it's they have Sony, they have Nikon, they have the new Pentax, they have the only one they don't really have is, or Canon and Fuji are the only ones that I think Olympus still makes.
I thought Fuji used a Sony sensor.
Well, maybe a Sony sensor, but with their own thing on top.
Their X-Trans filter array, but yeah. I think because that was their deal before. I don't know if it still is, but their deal before was Sony developed the tech and Sony had a 6-month window of exclusivity. before Fuji could release anything. But who knows? Because Sony hasn't released the A7000, so nobody has said publicly, at least, where the new X Pro sensor is coming from. Is it an A6000 sensor with the X Trans filter array on it? Who knows?
Well, it could be. I mean, there's a 24 megapixel sensor that Sony makes for Nikon for like the 610's
full frame.
Right.
So it would be like the 7200.
Right. The new one, right. I'm sorry. You're right. The new one is, yeah.
It's and still
is, crop is the 7200 is 24 megapixels now?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, so maybe it's one of something. Those, you know. It's really that filter that makes the Fuji look so... That and the post-production in the camera and the JPEG engine is so good in those.
Looks like, according to Fuji rumors, $1,799 to $1,899 for the body. You think it's worth it? I don't think it's worth it.
Well, how much did you pay for yours?
I don't know, $900.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure the price will come down fast. And you could probably get a first-gen X-Pro for like $500 now.
B&H had an incredible deal. X-Pro 1 with the 27-millimeter lens, I believe, and it was like $599.
Yeah. The problem with that camera, at least when I played with yours, is that like it feels slow nowadays. Just it's like the processor's not fast enough, you know?
I don't know if it's processor. I miss a lot of shots because it's like many contrast detection only sensors. If it can't find contrast, it can't focus.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas the next generation sensors have phase detection pixels on the sensor.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it suffers from a little bit of that. But when it locks, man, it is tack sharp.
It's now they're replacing all of the credit card machines to do the chip stuff now.
Yep, which is very slow.
That's what I was going to say. So is there
went
some
to Trader
sort of,
Joe's slow?
Yeah, you stick the thing in, and
you're
it
waiting,
takes like 10 seconds
waiting,
for it to like do
waiting.
The.
If even that, that's fast.
I don't understand. Like, is that a matter of? I'm sure there's some sort of calculations that it needs to do to like authenticate the card or something. Mm-hmm. But I just look at that and I go. Why? So basically all of these terminal companies are putting in the slowest, crappiest ARM processor or whatever the hell is inside of these things you can buy for 89 cents as opposed to $1.50 for the better one.
Is it a processing issue or is it a communication issue? Is there,
I think
is
it's
there
a
bi-directional
thing.
Kind of authentication and like a handshake type thing that has to happen? I don't know.
You know what? That's a good question for somebody else. I think it's some kind of weird thing where it's basically doing calculations based on information that's on the card, and the calculations are designed to take time so that you can't brute force it.
Oh, okay. So the time itself is a security measure.
Yes.
Interesting.
But if that was 2 seconds, that would be one thing. If it's 10 or 15 seconds for every single transaction.
When you've got 12 people online each
exactly.
register.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, then you've just lost 4 minutes of time on the line. Anyway, just interesting. Just something I've been thinking about lately.
If it is a security measure and not just a limitation of hardware, I am happy to wait because I would prefer security to speed.
Okay. Yeah. 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 But I mean, the security thing, the problem, this is all a complete rabbit hole, but the reason why they're doing the chip thing is that they want to shift the onus over to the merchant rather than the credit card company. That's all that's about. So basically
In terms of fraud?
Yes. That's what this is all about. It's all about getting it so that MasterCard doesn't have to pay fraud because they can say, you know, you said you had the card.
Go to Macy's and let Macy's deal with it or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. That's entirely what this stuff is. It's not about like whether or not it's going to make a difference to you as the final user. This is all just like crap between the credit cards and the merchants. Anyway, interesting stuff. Really what you should just use is something like Apple Pay or Google Pay, which like gives a token, which isn't actually your real credit card number.
Your real number is never disclosed the way I understand it.
Yeah. So that's ultimately a better way to do it. But yes, that phase one is really pretty.
Yeah.
Really, really pretty. Just a reminder, now that it's New Year, make sure you know, back stuff up, and it might be a good opportunity to clean your drive a little bit and organize things a bit. Because I've been talking to some friends lately, and they're like, I got stuff on 26 different drives and all the rest of it. $99 for a 4 terabyte external USB 3 Seagate today on Newegg.
Yeah, I saw that.
So
saw
it's like, that. It's $99, guys. Like, go spend $100, have a backup drive, or consolidate all your 26 different 256 gig drives over to like one big one that you can back up to an identical one, that kind of thing. I'm getting the new Drobo today. Mm-hmm. So I'll give a little mini review of it next week, but
yeah, I look forward to hearing what you see, because the first gen Drobo.
Oh, the first and second were terrible, and they did like 20 megs a second. Apparently the new one does 220 megs a second. So that's pretty good. It's got a battery in there. So like if you pull the power or the power goes out, it still finishes the write and all that kind of stuff. So, I'm going to give it a shot and see if it's good enough to use as like my main storage array, which I'll then back up to somewhere else.
That is cool.
Yeah. That would be nice. Right.
I think I'm going to go with one of the little Western Digitals, little portable ones. You can get them 3 terabytes now for $100.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, my thing is that I need a big storage, and I also need storage that if I end up getting like a 5K iMac at some time in the next year or two, like I all my storage is going to have to be external anyway, you know, to work on any of those kind of machines. Or if I build another Hackintosh, I could build a little one that doesn't have to have all the drives internal. I can like have my drive array completely independent from the actual computer. Right. Is kind of what I'm going for. So I'm going to give that a shot.
I did some looking. We're going to do another Hackintosh episode. I did some looking. The R9 380 does not work out of the box with LCAP.
Does the 380X?
No.
I feel like one of them does. Okay, so LCAP is the problem.
Yeah, it's not. They work out of the box just fine in Yosemite. It's something to do with El Capitan that...
I'll tell you, El Capitan has made Hackintoshes a little bit trickier, especially like if like none of the Skylake stuff is really up to snuff yet.
No, and you've got to go to Clover as your bootloader.
Yeah, I mean, the Clover bootloader, I'm all for. That's
fine, but it just it takes the simplicity out of it that Chimera had.
Well, no, they basically made it so that it's pretty smooth now, like the new Multibeast. Oh,
is there a new Multibeast?
Okay. Yeah, there's a new Multibeast, okay. So we'll do another. Should we do that like in as a full episode one day, or should we do it as a separate thing? The problem is our numbered episodes are sort of like numbered based upon, see what I'm saying?
Yeah, we could do it as a numbered episode.
Like just use one episode one day and we'll do half the show as a Hackintosh thing or something?
Sure, why not?
All right, maybe we'll do that next couple weeks.
Did you, while we're on gear for a second, did you happen to read Mac Rumors says that the next iPhone, no headphone jack?
I think it's a terrible idea. Personally, I think it's a terrible idea because I like using whatever damn headphones I want and I don't want to have a dongle to do it. It's
right.
And for what? To make it 1 millimeter thinner? The phone's thin enough, guys. No one's asking for a thinner phone.
If it were magnetic, so that, because I can't tell you how many times running or biking, I've gotten my headphones caught and they either yank the headphones off or they yank the phone out of my pocket.
Yes, I agree with that, but it's, you know, it's not. It's going to be the lightning port, you know. What about Bluetooth headphones? How do you feel about that?
I've never used them. Do you use them?
I mean, from an audio quality point of view, they are deficient.
I'm out running or on a bike. I don't need them to be, you know,
right. Well, that's audio. The thing.
I'm not going to buy a set of Kef, you know, earbuds. Oh, well, although Kef makes really nice earbuds. No.
Well, the apparently the Wirecutter has a particular one that they say is the one to get for workout, one called the JLab Epic Bluetooth, which are waterproof and they're about $100. And it's really here. I'll send you a link. They last for like 12 hours on a charge and they're
on a single charge.
Yeah. And it's really just these like little over ear things that like go into your ear.
Oh, I see them right here on Amazon.
Yeah.
Huh.
So I was actually considering
only 3.5 stars though. Why only 3.5?
I don't know. But, the Wirecutter guys say that they're by far the best ones they've tested and they look like they were not going to fall out, which is the annoying thing about a lot of
32% of the reviews are either 1 star or 2 stars.
Yeah. I wonder what the 1 or 2 stars are. Cause Wirecutter says they're great.
Yeah, that's no bueno.
Yeah, see, it's like, well, it's, you know, disappointed. What are they disappointed about? They're disappointed about the sound quality. Now, I guess, purchase earbuds for walking around. First time walked around a cold and windy day. this thing dangled under his chin. It's not supposed to be under your chin. It's supposed to be behind your head, you idiot. I think a lot of, you know, what the thing about Bluetooth headphones is that sometimes they just lose connection, right?
I've never used them, so I can't.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I was thinking of giving them a shot because I hate having the cable, because that way I could put the phone like under the rower, like on the floor, and I could row and not have it in like my waistband so it doesn't throw all over the place, you know?
Yeah. Hey, listeners, if you've got suggestions for Bluetooth wireless earbuds, shoot us an email, please.
Yeah.
Podcast it on taking pictures.
Yeah, we're idiots about it.
I end up like at the gym, I end up holding my phone.
Yeah.
Because then I can rein in the cable a little bit, but that's kind of a bummer.
No, that sucks. When I'm on the treadmill, I stick it on the little slab in front of me. When I'm on the rower, I stick it like in my waistband to work. It's the best I can do, you know?
I think Marquez uses these Jaybird ones, Jaybird X2.
Which is the other one they recommend, I think.
But they're like $170.
Jaybird X2, $130 on Amazon, it says. So are they up? Oh, they're $160 now. Yeah. Yeah, see, these wouldn't fit my ears. These would fall out. I need the thing over my ear, I think, if I'm like running and working out.
For stability.
Yeah, like they just like jiggle out. Like I don't, they don't stay.
Well, that's what happens with the Apple ones for me.
Oh, the Apple ones just like literally just fall out. Like bloop, they just fell out, you know. Anyway, just stupid. Do you want to do the Linda playlist? Do you want to leave?
Yeah, let's just do them real quick.
What do you got?
So, people asked us, what do you got? You can do yours first. You go first.
All right. I found some good ones. Mastering selections in Photoshop CC with Chris Orwig. You know,
good one.
That is a thing that a lot of people who start using Photoshop, different ways of actually selecting what it is you're trying to mess with is like a huge part of it. And there are 26 different ways in Photoshop to do it.
Right.
And all of them are good for different things.
The success or failure of the final image often will hinge on the quality of the mask that you're able to pull.
Yep. Yeah. So anyway, that's a good one. The practicing photographer with Ben Long, and there's like a whole series of them. And I figured these would be really
almost
good.
Included that one because that's a big, long series.
It is a big, long series. And a lot of them are short little videos where he talks about giving yourself goals and limitations and all that kind of stuff. So for somebody who needs sort of external influence as far as like recommendations on assignments and that kind of stuff beyond what we do every week, could be a good way to go. And then the Creative Spark, Brian Taylor, Handmade Photography with Brian Taylor, where they show him like working in a darkroom, which is actually just really beautiful. It's one of their sort of documentary level ones.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Also, the Helvetica documentary is up there too.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's a terrific flick.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. Maybe we can put links.
All right, what's on your list?
I went with a couple documentaries. The Jerry Uhlsman, Maggie Taylor, This Is Not a Photograph is really terrific. They are interesting in that Jerry Uhlsman famously does all of his composites on multiple enlargers in the darkroom. I think he's got 7 in kind of a horseshoe shape around the darkroom, and he'll move negative, you know, or set them up with multiple negatives and move paper from one to the next to create these beautiful composites. Whereas his wife, Maggie Taylor, is all electronic and is all about scanning and using Photoshop and manipulating and using vintage images and creating textures and patterns. And so it's a really interesting mashup of two styles of working, and their styles are ultimately very complementary to one another. And it's just a really interesting look into their lives. They seem pretty cool.
It's very pretty too, as I recall.
Yeah. The other one is another shorter documentary by F2 Design called Letterpress Printing and Poster Design. And this kind of aesthetic, this letterhead and woodblock type, is really in my wheelhouse. And I like it quite a bit. So it was interesting to see the actual behind the scenes process.
Do you think that'll go out of fashion at some point? Like, I feel like that came back into fashion.
I think it'll ebb and flow.
Yeah.
I think it'll ebb and flow. I think there will always be a desire for handmade looking things, whether that is design or photography or clothing.
Sure.
You know, I think there will always be a market for that. I think right now there's almost a renaissance in handmade goods and handmade looking things.
Yeah. I wonder if that hasn't peaked.
I don't know. I don't know. One of the people I follow on Instagram is a guy named Christian. His hashtag is at 1924US, 1924US.
Okay.
And he is a branding person, and he does branding for a lot of different sort of handmade companies. And he does some terrific stuff. And he seems like just a character. So, you know, check him out. Third choice, and this is because I've been trying to get back into layout and design for this ebook project. It is InDesign CC Essential Training. InDesign, like so many Adobe apps, is a monster. And cutting through some of the menus and some of the shortcuts with this Essential Training series has been very helpful in actually getting to move forward instead of just getting lost in menus and processes.
Yeah, sure. You all right?
Yep, I'm okay. Sorry, just choked on my own spit.
It happens as you get older, I think.
I'm good.
Yeah, you know, I did the menus for the diner, and like the big going back and forth because they screwed up the printing on one of the pages and stuff, and like, but I had to do all this stuff in InDesign, and I'm like, man, InDesign is like one of those tools. Like if it's what you need, it's amazing. You know, like if you understand what you're doing and you're using it the way it's supposed to be used, and like you figure out the little tricks and.
But there's so much stuff in it.
I know. That's the thing. You could dive in it and never be seen again.
I would love to see like Photoshop Essentials. I would love to see an InDesign Essentials where it's sort of a pared down version for people who aren't producing Vogue or Vanity Fair, but maybe are doing newsletters and ebooks.
Mm hmm.
You know, something with a little more functionality than Apple's iBooks, but not quite so deep as the current InDesign CC.
I like the word deep.
Deep.
Deep. That's good. Hey, how did people do on their assignments this week?
Terrific, actually. You know, this is such a talented group, and I know we say that a lot, but...
We butter them up.
We do. It is always so cool to see what you guys see out in the world. And I myself have been trying to get out and shoot more and see more. And so I love seeing the different interpretations of resolution. David Lawrence, not really resolution, more of a focus for the year. And that's more collaboration with fellow photographers in my area. Love to hear that. On Thursday, me and two of my photo pals went urbexing. Is that the urban
exploration?
Yeah. Urbexing. Nice. And had a lot of fun.
Don't fall through the floor.
Yeah. Don't do that. Please don't. Be careful.
That always seems really dangerous going into abandoned buildings to me.
Yeah. Me too.
We're weak.
Let's see.
Phil Roussin's picture, the portrait's nice with the girl in the snow. That's nice.
Yep. Yep. I like Matt Austin, 50 some portraits. Number one.
Yeah.
My goal this year is to shoot a new portrait every week of someone different. This is my mother-in-law, Teresa. We're starting the new year with a week and a half in Michigan with my wife's family, so I'm recruiting them to be my first couple of subjects. Terrific, Matt.
Yep.
Terrific stuff. Hugh, I love Hugh's commuted series. He has got, I would imagine he's got to have thousands of pictures by now. And they're terrific.
And well, no one knows.
That's right. Nobody knows. Yeah, Phil, I like that shot that Phil did, girl in the coat.
Yep.
With the bokeh.
Look at Tom Moore's picture. His resolution is to do every OTP assignment in 2016. He put up a selfie. You ever have that weird thing where you like hear somebody's voice over and over again, and then you see pictures of them and you go, wow, that's not what I expected. Or it is
right.
Like, oh, they totally look exactly like I imagined.
Right.
Yeah.
Keep them coming, Tom. And you know... Don't be so slacky on the phone calls. Let's get back in the groove there, man.
Oh, we got a good one this week.
I know. I'm just reminding him.
Yeah. How about another resolution? You keep calling us.
Tim Schuf, I've only read a few pages and gone over a few assignments, but I've already liked this book, The Visual Toolbox by David Duschman. Yeah, David's one of those people that and I've said this many, many times, his words are like fuel to me. I love David's words, and nice guy. You know, he's out on a 2-month trip around the world, and I'm sure he'll come back with some cool stuff.
Yeah. So what's for next week? What do we got?
Oh, I like Dilworth, Fifth Avenue, Girl with the Hat. Nice shot.
Girl on the Hot Tin Roof.
Girl on the Hot. this one was a little tough for me to look at. John Burridge. John shared this in the group. Wanted to share this with you guys. This is a beautiful and brave photo essay from my photographer friend and former colleague, Pat Kane. My friend's father was severely beaten by his adopted son, who suffers from fetal alcohol syndrome disorder. Somewhere in the horror of the event, Pat had the presence of mind to produce a moving photo essay on his father's horrible ordeal. And it's tough to look at, but really touching project, and kudos for John said, you know, being present enough to go, hey, this might be worth documenting somehow to someone.
Yeah.
That was a hard one to look at. Anyway,
yeah, that was tough stuff.
Yeah. Jay Lorito, a new member of the group, looks like. Okay. Person standing on, what is that? Just like a little rock. It's beautiful. Looks like Fiji or something.
Yeah, look at that.
It's beautiful.
Can't go wrong with Fiji, by the way.
Never been, but I hear it's...
Neither have I, but I imagine it's, you know, good.
I don't know if
go.
I could do the flight.
Yeah, these long flights really kill you.
Hey, Freddie, terrific still life. Window light too, breakfast table. Nice.
Yep.
Really nice. Anyway, okay, so what do you got? You chose this one. What do you got?
I put down renewal.
I like it.
New year, renewal.
Sure. Sure. Renewal. I like that. I'm going to go take a picture of my overdue library books.
I was going to say it's like a magazine subscription image.
Hey,
I'm waiting for Gardner to give that to us. What?
That's right. Speaking of library books.
Yeah.
You know these little neighborhood free library things?
I know of them. I do not have one. I don't frequent one myself.
I don't frequent them. Went to Georgetown this weekend. Right. Boy, had a terrific Cubano
Cuban in Georgetown. Sandwich.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, God, it was good. Anyway, on the way there, passed by one of the little free library book things, and they had a copy of the Hamilton biography.
Oh, okay. The one that it was based, the movie was
yeah,
based.
Yeah, yeah, that inspired Lin-Manuel. Yep. So, score.
You're reading that?
I am reading it.
Yeah, I did watch the end of the tour. Like somebody who wrote in suggested, because I'd been meaning to watch it for probably 6 months now, and I finally got around to watching it, which is the David Foster Wallace.
Right. Should I watch it?
Good.
Would I dig it?
Yeah, I think you'd dig it. I mean, there are scenes in it that are very intense, mm-hmm. But the writing is good. The acting is good. It's not exactly what I expected it to be, but it was good. And it makes me want to go
the,
read Infinite
Jason
Jest again. Jason Segel, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Who does an excellent job. Oh, he's great.
He?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Although, you know, what's his name always comes off as like a smarmy little annoying guy?
Zuckerberg. Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
Like Zuckerberg.
And I'm sure he's a really nice guy, but like every role I see him in, I'm just like, I want to kill that guy.
Right.
I hear he's a very, very bright guy, though. Anyway, so yeah, so we'll check that out.
I saw Creed.
Oh, how was that?
See this yet? It's fantastic.
I think I'll wait for that one for home, but I hear it's
it
very
is
good.
So good. Really, really well done. Michael B. Jordan was fantastic. Direction was terrific. What's his name? Coogler?
The director. Yeah. I listened to a good podcast. He was
Brian
on, he was on, what's the Elvis Mitchell one? The treatment.
Yeah.
He was on the treatment.
I haven't heard that one. I like
ago.
That show.
Yeah, I like their little background, their music. Make it, don't break it.
Really good movie. The first fight that he's in, they film the whole thing in one take.
Oh,
and
okay.
You really get this sense of immersion. Really well done. Good stuff. I wonder, just very quickly.
Yeah.
For someone who has not been sort of steeped in the mythology that is Rocky, who hasn't ever seen any of the other films.
If they'd have anything, if Rocky would just seem like a weird dream to them?
Yeah. Would they, do you, I mean, they shot the film and they did the story in a way that, that you knew what was going on.
Sure.
But I don't know that you would get the depth of the relationship between Rocky and Apollo. I think it would mean more.
Okay, but isn't that always? Oh, this is a rabbit hole. Isn't that always?
Should we save this?
No, quick thing. Isn't that always the case with like the other next generation down? Right. In the same way, in the Star Wars movies, to use another thing, like they've heard rumors of Luke Skywalker and that there was this big battle and all this stuff that happened 30 years ago, but they don't know any of the people who were actually there.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was this huge whole life that was led, the next generation just sees it as, oh, it's old Uncle Tom. You know what I mean? Or what have you.
Right.
But I think that that's the case with I mean, all of our grandparents who were in World War II and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, sure.
You know, like they crap they lived that we will never understand, that we just see him as like, oh, grandpa. But really, right. The guy was like, you know, on D-Day.
I kind of hope they don't make another one, but I think they probably
like
will.
Like this
will
be the end?
Yeah. And yeah. If they do make another one, I hope we don't see Rocky die. I hope it's just like a few years in the future.
Let him fade away.
And Rocky has passed on. Yeah. Like, we don't need to see that.
No,
we don't need
to see that. Photographer of the week this week. You ready for this?
What do you got?
Okay. This is one of those things where Chinese say their name reverse of how we do in the
so
West.
So like what, Wang Jing?
Yeah. But his first name, I think, is Jing, and Huang is his last name.
Okay. So but
Jing Huang
or Huang Jing. Jing. Okay.
Right. I was looking through my Instagram the other day and
I like this set colorless and tasteless. That's yes. Really good.
Some guy followed me and I went and looked at his work and it was all this gorgeous photography and I was like, who is this guy? And then I realized that he's really just posting other old school and famous photographers.
Okay, kind of reposting.
Yep. And one of the things that he posted was some of this guy's work. And I just thought it would be up your alley.
Yeah, it's great. Pure of sight. There's
sort of black and white minimalist. And even like when they're not black and white, they're just sort of toned, like sepia right. Kind of feeling.
They've almost got like a the same kind of toning that's in Joni Sternbach's Wet Plate stuff. That sort of buttery kind of toning on the whites.
Yeah, and I don't know if he does it in in post or what. I know that from what I understand, he shoots like an M4, like an old Leica. Because there's an article on the Leica blog about him, which you can go see as well.
I don't dig the navigation on his site, I'll tell you that.
No, well,
the way the galleries kind of...
A lot of people's sites are terrible. Interestingly enough, on the Leica camera blog thing here, do you see up top it says the name of the thing, blah, 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 date, blah, 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 estimated 5-minute read. How do you feel about that? Like telling somebody how long it'll take to read whatever it is below.
I love it.
It's kind of a neat idea, right?
Yeah, I use it on my site. And
Oh, you do? I hadn't noticed that.
It's on Faded and Blurred.
Oh, so cool. You've had that for, I never even noticed you had that.
Yep.
Wow.
I like the, and you can set it. It's somewhat adjustable. I don't know if this is a hand done thing, but in WordPress, there's a plugin for it and you can set it based on X number of words per minute that someone would read.
Oh, and it'll calculate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah, this guy still, shoots with an M4P. 35mm and 28mm lenses. He says, I'm still using the M4P and Summicron 35mm f2. He says, I have an M2 as a spare, which is a very old camera. He also has a digital M, but he prefers to use 35mm lens, although sometimes he uses 50 or 90. So basically, he's just like walking around with his 35mm lens taking pictures.
In this interview... Do you do retouching on the computer? How important is a computer as a photographer? I used to work in a traditional darkroom. Then I came in contact with the internet, so the computer is quite important for me. And I started to learn to use all types of software once digital cameras became widely used.
So Photoshop
ask,
and Lightroom.
What computer programs and filters do you use to enhance your images and why? I use Photoshop and Lightroom. I started to use Photoshop when it had just come out, so I'm very familiar with it. And I'm getting to know and use a software called M Monochrome.
Yeah. It's interesting, which I don't know. Is that software? I'm trying to find a thing called M Monochrome software, and I got nothing. I mean, I get the Leica camera. I wonder if his English is just a little odd so that, you know, he's not quite saying it correctly. He says, I don't think I'm very good at selecting because I don't follow any logic while shooting photos. I simply put together pictures that I'm interested in. I still can't remember all the pictures I've taken by heart. Oh, I can still remember all the pictures I've taken by heart. This guy's got a creepy memory. I can still deal with them all. I'm not sure if it'll manage to do that in the future. It might be a good thing because I forget. So, this guy was born in 1987, by the way. He's young.
Wow.
You remember 1987.
I do.
Yeah.
I remember it like it was 1999.
Anyway, really, really good stuff. Black and white sort of landscape city photography in Shenzhen, China.
Beautiful work. It's very, very kind of dreamy, grainy.
Yep. Yeah.
And, yeah. I wonder what software
he's talking about. Is there an actual piece of software that comes with the Leica monochrome that allows it to do stuff in post?
I mean, I wouldn't think so, because isn't that the whole point? Is it shoots in monochrome?
It does shoot in black and white in the camera, yeah. Like, it doesn't have any color.
Huh.
I don't know, just something to think about.
Yeah, if anybody's got a handle on what this might be.
Yeah, let us know. Anyway,
I wonder if he's using...
I thought you could kick out this guy.
Alien Skin makes a monochrome... Sweet. So does the Nick one, Silver Effects.
Yep.
But I don't know. Wonder why? Because you'd think the stuff that he's doing here, if he's shooting in monochrome, it's an easy fix to get to split toning in Lightroom.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. He could be doing the toning in Lightroom. That would be easy enough, right?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, nice work though. A lot of cats.
He likes cats. Apparently, there's a lot of cats around China. By the way, I just got a thing from B&H saying that the X Pro 1 body $499.
With lens or body only?
Body only.
Yeah.
So your deal is probably a little better, but still. Interesting. Anything else before we wrap up? We're late today.
We're late. Yeah, sorry, guys.
Long show.
Oh, wow. Jesus. Yeah. What are we at? Like 130, something like that?
140.
Ooh. That's too long. Can we cut something out?
I don't know. We could look through it.
I don't know. What do you think?
I think we should just leave it and people can listen to it and we'll try for a shorter one next week.
Okay.
If you want to get a hold of us, 347-687-9411, you can leave us a voicemail or you could write us at podcast@ontakingpictures.com, which we both get. Bill Wadman and Jeffrey Sidoris are both on Instagram and Twitter.
It's J-E-F-F-E-R-Y, people. E-R-Y.
Or G-E-O-F-F.
Yeah, no, don't. They're confused enough.
O-R-Y.
You know, you work with somebody for 4 years. They still don't remember.
This is what you get.
This is what you get.
And
C for effort.
Ding, ding, ding. All right, we'll talk to you next week, Jeffrey.
Have a great week.
All right, bye.
This way, say what you want to say, though I know your words will lay me out, so I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have for too long, it's clear to me this way. Say what you wanna say. I know what you will say will leave me out, but I should hear it said aloud. Everything we tried to